This week on the Boag World Show, we're joined by Seth Price to discuss the impact of user experience on marketing. This week's show is brought to you by Media Temple, Headscape, and my unhealthy obsession with Fallout 4. BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul Boag. Joining me as always is my long-term friend and colleague, Marcus Lillington. Hello.
You're in a funny mood, Paul, today.
Oh, do you know, I have had back-to-back calls all day.
Well, so, that'll teach you to have a holiday, won't it?
I know, you're not allowed to have holidays these days.
I'm not, so you can't.
And I sat around for a week and a half. This was my holiday, Marcus. You'll be ashamed of me.
You played games, didn't you?
I played Fallout 4 for a week and a half.
I don't even know what that is.
You're just so old. I bet our guest does. Seth.
Yes.
Seth, we've got Seth Price on the line. Hello, Seth.
Hello. How are you, Paul? And Marcus?
I'm very well.
Very
Marcus,
well,
you'll quickly learn that you know, Marcus is just rude to me the whole time. It's just the kind of format of our show.
Okay.
It's yeah.
So Seth, do you know about Fallout 4?
No, I don't. I'm not aware of it.
Oh.
See, that underlines it, that you're just a child.
Yeah, you're both grown-ups, aren't you?
And maybe.
A child at heart.
In the loosest sense.
I waste far too much of my life playing computer games. See, Gary Vaynerchuk, or however you pronounce his surname, he would tell me off badly for the amount of time I waste either watching television or playing computer games. But Seth, I bet you're one of these super productive people, aren't you? Judging by all the different things you seem to be doing, you must be just work the whole time.
My wife would say that I might be type A. I'm not sure.
See? I thought as much.
I don't. The one thing I can say is we don't have TVs in the house. I've never had a TV. And I've missed more popular shows in my lifetime than, you know, most people watch in a week. That helps the productivity.
It certainly does. Not having a television, don't even get me started.
I'm full of admiration, though, for people with no TVs, because I'm always moaning about it and saying, you know, I'm wasting my time watching this and I need to stop doing it, but I never do. And I'm just, so but this is just something that's never been a part of your life, Seth.
Yeah, you know, I had a hippie father who probably couldn't afford a TV, but didn't have a TV when I was growing up. And then, I never had a TV. I mean, I went from there, and then I had roommates, and at one point there was a TV, but I found it so overwhelming to be talked at that I couldn't watch it. And then, I mean, I watch movies, and of course I like going to the theater sometimes, and I have my shows that I might download on iTunes or, you know, whatever streaming service.
Okay. All right. Because I have to say, I'm always vaguely suspicious of people that don't have a TV.
Yeah. But,
it's a bit dodgy,
yeah,
in my opinion.
No, but the reality is you can, like, if I count the hours, like maybe in the last 2 weeks I've watched an hour of something.
Right.
That's a lot of hours to get other stuff done.
It is.
Yeah.
You're entirely right. But I'm glad to know that you do still go to the movies and that you do occasionally download stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because... Yeah, otherwise, I wouldn't consider you a real human being.
Oh, I'd be lying, actually, if I told you otherwise.
Well, that's true. That too.
So maybe we should introduce Seth.
Yeah, we ought to. Marcus is the professional one. I'm here for random entertainment. So Seth Price, you come highly recommended, as I said to you just before we started recording, highly recommended by random people on Twitter. We've never actually met before, have we?
That's correct.
And he says, distancing himself from my waffle. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I said, I want to do a show on digital marketing and talk a little bit about user experience and how the two interact with one another. And I said, who should I speak to? And time and time again, your name came up.
Well, I'm honored.
We spoke briefly via email. And then, so I know very little about you or what you do. So let us know. Give us a bit of background. You do a podcast for a start. I've seen that on your website.
Yep. I mean, I think at its essence, I am someone who is an entrepreneur that has a very sales and marketing bent. Like the only coding I can do is I can do some HTML and CSS, and I can break Java pretty easily. But I'd say that the thing that I've always had to do was to get the first sale and then the sale after that when there was very little budget, and then get attention for a company with very little budget. Mm. And so I tend to focus and say that I'm a marketer, and I believe that, you know, in the day and age that we live in, it's not much different than a couple of decades ago. You have to earn the right to participate with people. And so I just wear both of those hats in a company. And right now, for the past 5 years, I've been with a company that's been growing exceptionally fast in the real estate space, providing websites and marketing tools for real estate professionals. It's called Playster. And I've run both the sales and the marketing team. Right now I'm VP of industry relations, so I have fewer direct reports, but it allows me a lot more autonomy and the ability to, you know, interact with our largest customers and largest potential customers.
Okay, so I got the impression that you were an independent consultant, but you do that alongside, you know, the podcasting, the writing, the speaking is alongside this role.
Yeah,
where you are.
So, okay. I mean, we could go into this in the interview, but it's my belief that you have to walk the talk. So if you are going to speak about marketing, but you're not actually marketing, like I don't trust those people. Yeah. That are just, hey, you know, they tell you how to do stuff, but then you go on their Facebook or you look at their content. It's like hiring an agency for content marketing and they don't actually create anything. Like I'm always suspect. And so my writing and podcasting is really about self-education and walking the talk.
Oh, that is just, it's the self-education bit that's how I started off.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started blogging, it was almost to clarify things in my own mind as much as it was expecting that anyone else would read it. And I actually think that's a really good way to start blogging, because then you don't become too obsessed with, oh, there's nobody reading it, then I might as well give up.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, do something else, you know?
I mean, I like that people read it and listen and comment, but I'm going to do it anyway. Do you know, I mean, I'm doing it selfishly. I'm doing it for me, even though I have the reader in mind. And I think
absolutely.
That's always some of the best stuff that you can find. So that's what I do.
So your podcast is The Craft of Marketing.
That's correct.
And so tell us a bit about that show. So you've had some really good people on it, some excellent guests. Is it interview format?
It's interview format. And it's really, it came about out of private conversations that I would have at conferences speaking to other CMOs or VPs of marketing or VPs of sales, where, you know, you're sort of in the back either before you go on or over cocktails asking them about, hey, you've made some amazing traction on Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, or your team's grown. How in the hell did you do that? And so I decided that there was some real value for my team to be able to hear those conversations. And there was some real value for me to be able to really ask the questions that we talk about sort of in private, but do it in public. And so that's the format of the show, is I'm really trying to figure out what they're doing that's working that I might be able to apply.
Yeah. It's really good for that, isn't it, podcast? Because it's like an excuse to interview all these people and learn all that they're up to and all their tricks and stuff like that.
Oh, so, yeah, I mean,
not that
it
I'm
saves
doing
me.
That.
It, sorry, it gives me the chance not to have to read anything.
Oh, yeah.
I can watch TV.
Oh, yeah. Or you could listen to your podcast while you're on your spinning machine or whatever it is.
Ooh, yeah, maybe that's not me, but yeah.
Marcus, yeah, the idea of, yeah. But, I mean, we don't even listen back to our own show, so. It's terrible. Do you listen to other podcasts?
Oh,
Seth?
I do. I have.
Oh, you just, see, I don't. I'm terrible. I used to listen to loads of podcasts, but I don't anymore. It's not a good plan, really, is it?
Well, I mean.
But no, I've got, some of the guests that you've had on look absolutely great. And, I mean, you speak so much as well. You seem to be all over the place speaking. So that looks like a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, for me, about trying to figure out the best way to share ideas, but also to learn a craft. Like speaking and holding a 4,000 person audience, holding their attention and getting them excited is really tough. Like, do you know, I mean, we all go to conferences and you're like, wow, there was two standout speakers and the rest were snoozers.
Yeah.
So I, you know, personally, I'm trying to become someone who really moves people's lives, and it's a lot harder than it sounds.
Yes, it is. It is.
Paul's pretty aware of that. I tend to avoid any chance at speaking. Something that doesn't come very naturally to me.
Oh,
in these kind of situations, it does, but in front of a big audience.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough. You know, some people are natural.
But what's really bizarre, what you don't know, Seth, about Marcus is in an earlier life, he was a pop star.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm not joking. He was in a band called Breathe back in the 90s, was it?
80s. Yeah,
that's 80s. 80s. But you were playing an instrument, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm still happily standing on stage playing an instrument.
Yeah, see, that's
completely different.
Oh, completely different. I get that. It's like if I had to cook on, I like cooking. If I had to cook on stage, that'd be like easy. It'd be like having people in my kitchen. I do that every night. But like,
yeah, I think I could do that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, speaking is
speaking's different. Speaking's different. It's like theater, but just you.
Mm.
So, yes. With your podcast, is that just you interviewing somebody else, or do you have other people? Have you got the equivalent of a Marcus?
No, it's just me. So I can fit it in during my travel schedule.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I'm on the road probably every other week for work or speaking or something, and you know, it's pretty difficult to coordinate with someone else to do a recording if that's the case.
Yeah, that is.
We just about manage it, don't we?
Well, yeah, we've become quite slick at it over the years, but there, you know, it can be tricky especially when I'm off speaking.
Yeah,
well, and then you'll just stop, don't we?
Yeah,
yeah.
So we do seasons, which kind of helps. Mm. Anyway, before we really need to get onto the discussion of why we're actually here, but we do like to introduce our guests a little bit and get to know them, especially when I don't, you know, I haven't met you before, it's really cool. But before we get into the discussion, let me quickly mention our first sponsor of the day that have just been so supportive of the show and have supported this entire season, of which we've only got one more episode. This is the penultimate one. So a huge thanks to Media Temple for their support. There's so much that I have spoken about Media Temple over this season. I've talked about their amazing support, their great infrastructure, all those kinds of things. But I do just want to mention the site builder that they have. For those of you that are less techie minded, you just need a website, you want a website that works, something you can put together quickly, your emphasis is on the content. They have a site builder tool called Verb that is ideal for you. It allows you to create an unlimited number of pages and work with a huge number of kind of customizable themes. You can really make it your own without needing to know any code or, in Seth's case, break any JavaScript. It's mobile ready. You can use your own domain. You still get all the great Media Temple support that I've been ranting about for the entire season because I'm such a fan of their support. It allows you to connect with loads of other services if you want to pull in things like tweets, etc., like that. All of that for $10 a month, which I think is pretty good for a no-hassle solution. There's a free trial, and you can get a special discount as a Boag Award listener for really any hosting that you go with Media Temple. Use the promo code Boag, B-O-A-G, for 25% off your web hosting. Just go to boagworld.com/Media Temple, and you enter the promo code on sign up, and you can check out Verb and find out all you need to know. Right, now that's that out of the way, let's turn our attention to the subject at hand, which is the relationship between user experience and marketing. Now, I know a lot about user experience. I know a little bit about marketing. And it strikes me there's some interesting things going on in the world of marketing that do impact user experience and vice versa. So the reason I wanted to get you on the show, Seth, is really to talk about some observations I've made about marketing and whether I'm right or wrong, because I'm not the expert in this area. So, for example, one of the things that I get the impression is that digital marketing is changing a lot recently, and we're seeing a kind of a decline in the effectiveness of the more traditional digital marketing tools, the things like SEO, pay-per-click, banner advertising. You know, you're getting hit with things like, you know, ad blockers built into, you know, into the iOS operating system. More and more people using ad blockers anyway. Pay-per-click seems to be becoming more and more expensive. SEO is the algorithm changed quite recently. So am I right in saying that there's quite a big shift going on?
Yeah, I mean, just like every tactic that has happened throughout time, is they get diluted. Doesn't mean that they're no longer effective. They just need to be, you know, arrows in your quiver as opposed to, you know, the mallet that you use to win. And, yeah, you know, when I dissect the three things that you mentioned, I'll go the last one first, banner advertising. It's... You know, its conversion rate is really low, but as a very targeted brand application, so imagine that you're doing retargeting to a list that you've uploaded to Facebook Insights, and you're showing people banner ads that represent their searches on your site or your brand if you were trying to stay in front of them post-purchase, like super effective and really cost-effective. Mm-hmm. And then if you go back to, you know, PPC, it's still really great if you're hyper-targeted and the thing that you are trying to convert, they actually want. Like, you can no longer easily convince people to want stuff that you want them to. You've got to figure out how to, you know, put the things that they're interested in at the times that they're interested in them in front of them. And that's where those tools become really useful. And then I think lastly, SEO is still really powerful, but you just can't game the system like you used to.
Yeah. You said a really interesting thing there, which is you can't convince people to purchase something you don't want. They don't want to. It's about putting the thing in front of the right people. And that is so nice for me as a user experience expert to hear a marketer say something like that, because in my mind, that is the key here. That's where you begin to see digital marketing and user experience intersecting, because essentially what you're doing is trying, the way I often describe it is trying to encourage people take action on something they've already said they want to do.
Exactly.
That in their head they want to do.
Exactly.
It.
Yeah. Lowest amount of friction to the highest amount of value. I mean, that's the game, whether it's the UI portion or whether it's the activities that you're doing, you know, to attract customers.
Mm. I mean, I find that targeted advertising freaks me out a bit, though.
Yeah, I mean,
I suppose it's because we do work with loads of different clients, so therefore I'm often on, you know, maybe reviewing a site by a particular organization that I'm not actually looking to interact with, but then I'm kind of bombarded with target advertising relating to that. So maybe that's why I've got a slightly skewed view of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is very powerful.
I mean, I think we're in a I'll call it a dumb stage, where it's still a more blunt instrument, and maybe the sub 1% of folks are doing it very intelligently. So, for example, if you go to Amazon and they show you like-minded things, you're pretty okay with that. But if you visit a site that you had no intention of buying anything from, and then all of a sudden they're trying to sell you blenders, or, you know, God forbid it's, you know, something you have zero interest in, you're like, what the hell happened? But we do have the capability to bridge that gap. It's just that most people don't do it yet.
Yeah, you do feel that it's quite early days in that, but from both sides, really.
Yeah.
It's quite early days from the kind of marketing side, in terms of being much more focused. Even like Amazon recommendations, sometimes it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
The stuff it throws up.
Oh, yeah.
You know. But then on the flip side, I think there's also... The reason, Marcus, you find that maybe a bit freaky, and so do I to some degree, it's almost a generational thing. We're not used to... Yeah. We're not used to computers being intelligent enough to make good observations and provide us with intelligent recommendations. You know, so I think maybe that will change over time as well.
Yeah, well, there's also the human element, which is... If someone's driving to make profit, they're going to make some less intelligent decisions on how to use these tools, thinking that they're going to convert. And they might in the short term, but that's why you're seeing like folks willing to take that risk to put an ad in front of you just because you spent 2 seconds on their site, which is really, if you were a human and you were trying to help humans, you would go, that's probably not the smartest idea.
No, because it goes back to this thing of, you know, chances are you're probably trying to sell somebody something that they don't want, rather than nudging them towards making a decision about something that they do want.
Exactly, you know? Exactly.
There's that great book, isn't there, called Nudge?
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've read it.
I've not read it.
No, it's really good. One of the principles of that is something, it talks about something called liberal paternalism, which is the idea that people should be able to do what they want, you know, and that you should give them the freedom to buy what they want, do what they want, but you can nudge them in the direction that's right to go. So a really great example it gives, which I use a lot because I work for not-for-profits, is that everybody says they want to give to charity, but nobody ever quite gets around to doing it.
Yeah.
You know, because they're living in the moment with the immediate concerns that they've got, the immediate pay packet, etc. And that actually our job, as whether it be marketers or user experience designers, is to kind of encourage them to do what they want to do and overcome the barriers and the lethargy and the, you know, all of that kind of thing that gets in the way of them doing it.
Yeah.
So actually, there's quite a lot common, really, between a marketing perspective and a user experience perspective on that.
Oh, to me, and there will be marketers that may disagree, but the goal is the same, which is, hey, we have a customer or potential customer that is trying to achieve something in their life. And either we have something to help that or we don't, but let's assume that we do. We're trying to do that in the way that gives them success.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, another area, going back to, we touched on search engine optimization very, very quickly and how you can't game the system like you used to be. And there's kind of been a shift towards content marketing, for want of a better view.
Yeah.
Now, I've been reading some really interesting things and making some observations on my own, really, about how content marketing seems to be becoming increasingly difficult. You know, and that we've all been encouraged to blog more and to share more of our expertise and all the rest of it. But actually getting people's attention for that content is becoming increasingly difficult. Do you feel like we're reaching some kind of saturation point, at least in some sectors?
Yeah, I mean, I might frame it differently. I would say that it's about time that just the garbage that most, you know, companies and people put out now needs to
compete. The company blog.
Yeah, it now needs to compete on the web. So I'll make it analogous to food. So if we go back 20 years ago, you could travel anywhere in the U.S. and you could get like a Denny's or an Arby's or a McDonald's. But finding a fantastic cup of coffee or a really good restaurant that served, like, God forbid, a fresh vegetable was really difficult. But now, today, because of competition and awareness on the consumer side, that the level of quality has risen greatly. Now, that's happening with content, which is if you started a blog 20 years ago, you were a pioneer and you just got followers because you were blogging and they didn't know what the hell it was. Now that everybody blogs, right? Everybody creates content. And now it's about quality, but also quality that really resonates with the particular individual that might be reading it. Like, you really have to dial in on your tribe to make it impactful. And then if you're on the business side, you have to think about where on the customer journey that content is going to be applied, and then just fully understand that some things don't apply to the entire journey. Some things are just about building awareness, and some things are about overcoming objections, and some things are about helping them share and get reviews and refer other folks. So I think it's about time. I've been waiting for this moment. And now the content that you see, like, there's a much higher level of quality across the board.
Yeah. I mean, it's a area that really interests me, because it's an area that again starts to impact that user experience. The fact that, you know, there's been this period of time where people have been churning out content in order to grab eyeballs, and actually that's almost got in the way of what it is people really want to do. You know, if I'm going to to a website to purchase, I don't know, a laptop or something like that, I don't want 100 best tips on getting the most out of your laptop. That's not my initial goal anyway.
Yeah.
You know, my goal is to make the purchase. Now, once I've made the purchase, then sure, you know, there's a place for telling me that I can get more out of what it is that I've got. But you almost felt that, you know, this kind of content was being created really just to grab eyeballs more than it was actually for the good of any users.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that you're 100% correct, which is, hey, it's a really great attention getting tactic. But if you are going to be really strategic about it, it's about understanding that consumer journey, just like you would in UX and UI, and going, hey, they're starting at this point. What are the tools that I need to give them to make good decisions and to be successful? And then understanding to put the right thing in front of the person at the right time. That just requires a little more savvy than most marketers have. And not because they're not smart people, but, you know, we all have to do more with less, because that's just the way of the world. And so if you wanted to do all that, but your team hasn't grown and your budget hasn't grown, it gets a little difficult.
I like the way that you talk about, you know, you've mentioned several times the idea of the customer journey and picking the right moment to do things. And I think this is a reoccurring theme that is really quite important in marketing. I can't remember whether I said this on the show, so I apologize to the listener if I have said this one before. But I had a great example recently where I went to a clothes site because I wanted to buy a jumper. And it was a specific jumper I was going for. And I went to the website, and the first thing that popped up, right, I immediately arrived, and one of those overlays appeared on the screen that said, essentially, 10% off your first purchase if you sign up for our newsletter. And, you know, at this point, I was like, well, first of all, I don't know whether I want to purchase the jumper yet, because I haven't yet seen it.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether I want that 10% off. And secondly, even if I did purchase the jumper, do I really want to sign up for a newsletter with you guys? Because I don't know what the quality of your other stuff is like as to whether I want to be informed when you release new things or not. So I immediately closed the box, as you would do.
Yeah.
And I carried on with my task of what it was that I wanted to do. And I got, and I saw the jumper, and I actually really liked it. And I really liked a lot of the clothes they had. At which point I was like, well, do you know what? I would give my email address over in return for 10% off this purchase, because I'm going to buy this jumper and I wouldn't mind knowing whether, you know, if they release new stuff that I might like. Could I find that sign up box again?
No way.
No. And so it was gone. The moment was gone.
Yeah.
And it's so important to understand the decision-making process that people go through, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've really been a proponent. So in our teams, we actually have UX and UI sit right next to marketing. So it's really, they're in one room because those types of decisions, like a UX person is really thinking about that. It's like, hey, what's the likelihood? So if I were to re-engineer that scenario, I might, because I do want to capture casual visitors to the site that might bounce, right? That intent conversion. I might offer something different, something that's less committal, right? At that stage, as opposed to committing to an email list from a company I don't know for products I'm not sure about yet because I haven't looked at them. And then at the moment of checkout, I would definitely want to go, I would want to offer that discount because I want to ensure the checkout. And I'd want to offer them participating in something that's maybe a little more friction-based, but not too much because I don't want to scare them away. And I think that UX, UI folks, really, that's what you think about a lot. Yeah. And impacting how marketers, you know, knee-jerk reaction is like, let's get their email. You know, it's like, it's crazy. But I think that there's that's where the opportunity lies.
Hey, I'll tell you another one that gets me on this kind of, you know, subject is when you arrive on a website, let's use, you know, buying a laptop again. You arrive on the website, first thing you're confronted with is follow us on Twitter or follow us on Facebook. You know, because often those icons look very different to the rest of the site. So they kind of grab your eye and draw your attention to it and actually take you away, you know, grab your attention away from the primary call to action. But, you know, that's not the moment to ask for something like that. But once I've bought a laptop, once I've gone through the process and purchased it, you inevitably end up on that page that goes, continue shopping. Yeah. Well, no, you know, I'm done. That's the point to say to people, hey, why not follow us on Twitter for, you know, great recommendations about how to get most out of your laptop?
Yeah.
You know, or, for me, that's much more powerful.
Or follow us on Twitter and, you know, get 20% off your next purchase, or follow us on Twitter and get our ultimate guide to, you know, leveraging your laptop for business success or whatever the thing is.
Yeah, absolutely. So timing is everything and picking that right moment in the user journey.
Yeah. And I want to say one more thing. Those decisions are generally made by someone in leadership that has no right making that decision, but they've seen it someplace else and they sort of blanket understand, hey, we need to be like doing social like Facebook and Twitter. And they don't understand that that's just that's an activity, right? It's a community that that you have to build. It's not another like is useless unless those people actually care about you. So I think, you know, that is just for folks working in the space to know is like our job is to educate leadership, you know, bottom up and top down. So we're making these decisions to build long-term relationships with our customers.
I think that might have to be my new title. Another like is useless unless people actually like you.
Yeah.
Yes. That'll have to be the title of the episode. So I've been cheating a little bit with these questions because, you know, I've been talking about the decline of the effectiveness of more traditional marketing. You've pulled me up a little bit on that. And then, you know, I've implied that content marketing might not be kind of working long term. And, you know, you've pointed out the ways of proving it. So I'm kind of maybe manipulating things a little bit to say, with these kind of other marketing techniques changing and maybe up being under threat a little bit, do you, you know, what role do you see user experience playing in helping build brand with, you know, and help you win those new customers? Is it, you know, what impact does user experience have from a marketing point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the marketing and brand teams of the future, and I say the future because I don't see it a lot right now, has both brand. I'll say the four components in my mind are there's brand. So the defender of the mission and the core values of the company or the organization. There's the marketer, which is really about, you know, strategy and tactics to articulate that on the web. There's the analytics piece, which is the individuals that are testing and really looking at past experience, but also you know, gathering third-party data sets to make better decisions. Mm-hmm. And then there's the UX UI. Without all four of those pieces at the table in an organization, we are going to be continually less and less effective in our marketing efforts because the consumer is getting more and more and more empowered. And I'm not saying it's us against the consumer, but our job, it's like if we had to produce a network TV show, our job is to produce an awesome network TV show that really taps into, you know, what's in the zeitgeist and what consumers are wanting. We've got to do that as marketers now. That's our job.
Yeah. Jenna, and I think there's a lot of, obviously my audience is primary user experience people, and I think there's a little bit of snobbery within our community about our relationship with marketers.
Yeah.
And actually I totally agree with what you just said there, that in my mind, marketing and user experience and analytics or user research or whatever you want to call it, and brand building, they are all so interlinked. You know, and there is such a fundamental need to have that collaborative relationship across them.
Yeah. I mean, because in the past, most organizations are fairly siloed, right? So you've got the analytics team. They might be in a third-party room somewhere. Who knows where?
Yeah.
Poor guys.
Yeah, they still are siloed.
Well, I mean, which is ludicrous because they're the only ones that can tell the CEO what's happening with the company. And then you've got UX UI, which you're like, oh, you guys designed this. I haven't seen it yet. And now I'm going to look at it. Like that's sort of, can I say ass backwards? That's ass backwards.
You can say ass backwards, definitely.
Because during the design process, that's when the fun collaboration is. It's like, hey, we're thinking about mm-hmm. doing this and we want this type of media and this type of interface. What do you think? And then there's like, oh, well, if you did this, it might engage the consumer. Oh, don't do that too early. You're going to scare people. Like you're going to get high bounce rates.
Yeah.
Let's test it. Like those types of things are crucial to me for the creative process to really get any success.
And I mean, I guess, you know, in a world where peer-to-peer recommendation is such a huge thing, reputation is such a huge thing, those positive reviews and all the rest of it is such a huge thing, creating an outstanding user experience has to be such a crucial component from a marketing perspective. It must make your job really hard if the user experience sucks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this is always the case, is that there are times when within any organization where you have to smooth over the weaknesses in your strategies and tactics. And so I'll just, analogous to a startup, when you start up, generally, your UX and UI is really bad because you don't know what you're building yet. And you solve that by humans, right? You solve that by over communicating and being really personal and sort of selling the dream of what you're building.
Yeah.
And then as you get bigger, that becomes impossible to do that at scale. And then you need to like actually build something that works. So in the real world, we see that with, you know, Uber or Airbnb, like a great concept. But if you used Airbnb in the beginning, it was just a great story, but their interface was really just, a lot to be desired, but they were just trying to get the story out and they couldn't figure out how to do it. Now, like it's a really graceful interface. And so I think that it's a progression and a journey, and it's painful when it's not right, but it's also real life.
And I guess as well, because user experience extends beyond the interface into, the kind of interaction on multiple levels and almost into the realms of customer service as well. I mean, that further complicates it all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so one of the things we do at our company, which is costly, but it's necessary, is we have live customer support 7 days a week. And we do that because our audience works on the weekends. So they are real estate professionals that, you know, they have open houses on Saturday and Sunday. And so when we started, we didn't do that. And there's no amount of user interface that can solve all the customer support issues. And so we just needed to make sure that we applied that. And the upshot is all of the calls that would turn into frustration now get responded to by a person, and then we can take that learning, pass it on to the UI UX team and go, hey guys, they keep complaining about whatever this thing is. Can we fix that? And then we just, you know, you've got this really positive loop that makes their job easier, less tickets, like all of those things, but you got to have both.
So from a marketing perspective, what parts of the user experience do you find to be particularly important? What causes, or put it the other way, what causes the biggest headaches for you if it's not in place?
Yeah, so I do think it depends on the stage of the company, but I'll talk about a company that is beyond the proving that they have a valid idea and they're trying to have growth, retain customers, and have revenue growth. In that scenario that I just framed, getting the customer to actually use the tool that they've just downloaded and paid for is so important to reducing churn that if you don't address that from a UX UI perspective, like you're just, your churn's going to be through the roof and there's nothing you can do to get their attention again once you've lost it. And it's not because they don't want to, but there is that sweet spot when you download this awesome piece of software and you sort of want to learn how to use it. It's like Sketch. You guys use Sketch or heard of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great tool. When you download it and they have that first, you know, example of a piece that you can dissect and you're like, oh, this is really easy to use. That's that moment that has to be there from a UX UI perspective, because if it's not, it's going to be like one of the 50 things you downloaded in the last 2 months and it's going to collect dust. So that's what, where about, I think is huge.
What about from a kind of, you know, where you're a more traditional type of business, you know, somebody that sells, either a service or a product. Do you see there being a role for a good user experience as a kind of marketing, you know, a marketing component then?
Well, I don't feel like I'm a lead witness, but I do believe that the user experience is crucial to every aspect. Like I come at this from a person who has changed a bedpan and waited a table. And so the experience that the end person gets is the responsibility of everyone. And hopefully there's people that actually understand that and wear that hat. On a more traditional sense, from a service-based company, if you aren't really on the web at all, you probably in 5 years aren't going to exist in having a sales funnel. And so the experience of the consumer in discovering you and then trusting you throughout the ways that they engage, whether that starts in a handshake and then works its way to validation on LinkedIn or on the web in some way, and then back to your site or through content or through your ads, that has to be a seamless experience across all of the multiple devices, because the moment they hit a blocker, like it doesn't work on their iPad or their Android or whatever, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And that moment of connectivity is now severed forever because they can't remember your URL, which is probably too long, and you know, a .co or whatever it is. So I think it's really crucial across the board, even at its simplest level.
I love what you said there about the experience is everybody's responsibility. And I think that's another thing that we can be quite bad at in the user experience community, that, you know, we are the user experience designers. We're the ones that are responsible for the user experience. And that's just bollocks, to use a British phrase.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of us, isn't it? Whether you'll be in the marketing department or even in like the finance and accounting department, all of you are affecting the experience.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I say to my teams and to, you know, the other leadership on the team is sales and marketing and the experience that our customer has is everyone's responsibility. Like if something is not working and we don't have the input of sales in the marketing process, like we're just like you know, blowing up balloons to make get attention, but it's not really helping the entire organization or helping the customer. And I think that's it's just hard to do. Like, that mentality is really, really tough to ingrain as part of your culture, but it's so necessary.
We've talked a lot about what user experience brings to modern marketing and the impact that it has. But I'm quite interested in the other way around. You know, what do you feel that the marketing community can bring to improve the user experience, or what lessons can we learn as user experience people from the marketing community?
I think it's the immediacy of whether the activities that we're doing in creating this experience is getting results. And so you can create the most, you know, elegant user experience, but if we can't figure out a way to get people in it and get them to talk about it, it doesn't matter. And like, we see tons of really beautiful apps on the App Store that just languish, because no matter what you create today, 80% of your effort has to go in promoting it, because you're just not going to, you're just not going to get attention for it. And so really understanding that as a UX UI person, that if you don't get buy-in from the marketing team and you're not collaborative, that the things that you look to do to make successful are really going to have a hard time getting out into the world. And so I think it's like, it's two legs of a three-legged stool. Without the other, you're sort of, you're screwed. And vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you just, to be honest, that's a perfect point to end on. And I think we've learned a valuable lesson from this, Marcus, which is that
Twitter, I should be spending 80% of my time on marketing.
You should. Right. There's something you need to know, Seth, right? That me and Marcus worked together for many, many years. And I'm still a director of the agency that Marcus and a guy called Chris Scott ran. But I'm a non-executive director now, so I'm off doing other things.
Yeah.
But I used to spend the vast majority of my job essentially marketing Headscape, which is the agency.
Yeah.
And since I've left, they've been rubbish at marketing. You've been coasting on your reputation, haven't you?
We have been, yes. We've been very busy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's no excuse, is it? We have actually started to... I have three... posts that we've written after having about 3 months, 4 months off.
You realize that Seth's eyes are rolling at you, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just
the, watch yes, less TV. So that's all that's I can it. Say.
I only watched a small amount of small amount of TV, and it's only at the end of the day when I can't do anything else.
Well, that's you when you actually so hard, get to Marcus. Do stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it used to be like that. I was a real night owl when I was younger, but I'm getting more and more the other way around. If I want to do anything, I have to get up early now.
Yeah.
You just want to tuck yourself up in bed with some cocoa, don't you? Something like that. No, the lesson I think we've learned is that when it comes to selecting guests, the crowdsourcing from Twitter is the way to go. So it was
absolutely
really good, Seth. It was so great to have somebody completely outside of kind of the normal realm of people that we have on this show. And it's really interesting to see the relationship between those different disciplines. In fact, you could do a whole series on that, couldn't you? Just having people from different disciplines, you know, and how they interact with UX people. Okay. So we come to our second sponsor, of the day, which is a weird one, because our second sponsor is Headscape. Because Marcus feels like he needs to do some marketing and promotion work. So go on, you've got a professional marketer sitting there who's going to be judging you on what you now say and how you present Headscape. No pressure there, Marcus.
Really? I don't think so.
Are you just going to skip it?
Can I ask you, what do you guys do?
Go on then.
We do. Headscape is a web design agency. We do digital strategy, web design, and development. I've had four slots in this series. This is the third one. I did a kind of overall, this is who we are and what we do. As Paul said, the reason for doing this is because he's off doing other things, and he was very much our kind of marketing arm. And since he went, then obviously that's reduced, but I'm still doing this podcast with him. So it's kind of, I said,
that's great.
Let me have a couple of slots so I can talk about Headscope, just to remind people who we are and what we do. So the first that's one, great. I talked about everything we do kind of on a high level, and I've decided that for the second, third, and fourth one, I'd break it down into design, which is what I spoke about last time, and I went on for a very long time about that.
You did.
And I'll try and be a bit quicker this time. Well, I'm going to talk about our development skills, so coding, that kind of thing. And then I'll finish off next week with talking about our consulting skills and what we do in that area. So I will, as I've, the first thing I wrote when I've put some notes together is be quicker than you were last time.
You did talk for quite a long time. You probably, in your preamble, you've probably gone over your allotted time, by the way, Marcus.
I know. I'll try and be quick. So anyway, some agencies specialize in front-end development, HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Others specialize in back-end development, developing content management systems, business systems, that kind of thing. We do both, which is obviously quite a bonus for us and potentially for our clients too. We've got some great people in the team who have been, some of them been on the show, Dan Shearman, Ed Merritt, who we talked about last week when I was talking about design. They focus on front-end development, and they're always arguing with each other about what's the best approach, which I kind of see as the fact that they're very passionate about what they do. And they genuinely are. They're always arguing about how we can improve what we offer, which is great. We've got two guys who are probably the unsung heroes of our team, which is Chris Henderson and Ian Luckcraft. Mm. And they're the guys that make everything work. They do a lot of Drupal development these days, but there's always quite a lot of custom bespoke work as well. And to finish off, I asked the three of them, Ed's off at the end of this week, I asked three of them to just give me one example of work they've done that they're particularly pleased with. So I'll quickly go through those. Dan mentioned we've done work with a global publisher called Palgrave Macmillan. Mm. And he mentioned the palgrave.com site. Typical Dan style, he said he particularly likes the homepage and listing for the responsive calculations for the columns and inserting the peak panel thing, which is basically it does a really nice rollover on the panels, which was way before kind of panel rollovery panels were particularly trendy. So he got in there early on that one. Chris mentioned we've just done some work with the European University Institute, which is EUI.EU. Nice, easy URL to remember that one. Where basically he's been modifying, customizing a plugin called Editus, Editus, which is basically given the university guys what they need to be able to do what they needed to do with their website, which they couldn't do before. So it's kind of back end thing. And Ian mentioned some work that we do a lot of work for the British Lung Foundation. One of those being a questionnaire, effectively, for people with lung issues. And the URL for that is passport.blf.org.uk, which has recently won an award from the British Medical Association. So I thought I'd push that one as well, which is effectively pulls in custom data and presents it to the world. So I've rambled on an awful lot again, but if you want to check out any of those URLs to see the kind of level of skill that these guys have got, I'd very much appreciate it.
They'll be in the show notes as well as normal,
yep.
Which is really good. Marcus, there's another thing that Marcus does every show.
Yeah, blimey.
Yeah, you're not prepared for this, are you?
I am. This is my favourite joke. I'd say what Paul was going to say there, Seth, is I tell a joke at the end of every show.
It's really unfortunate, Seth, and I'm really sorry.
It goes back
on the spot.
we started doing this in 2005, and the idea being, I think we need to be a bit more entertaining. I know, let's tell a joke.
Let's tell a joke.
but it's kind of stuck. But this is a good one. A guy called Ian Lasky, who's probably our chief joke provider, sent me this one, and I particularly like it. So, what do you do if you're attacked by a group of clowns? You go for the juggler.
Aim for the jugular, did you say?
You go for the juggler.
Oh, dear.
You ruined it.
I talked over it, didn't I?
You did talk over it.
So it's my fault this week that nobody laughs at your joke. Okay, I don't mind for one out of 20 gazillion shows that we've done that I'll be responsible for the joke failing. We'll allow that. Hey, I tell you what, if you're listening to this, you can contribute jokes. We like you sending jokes in. You can send them to Marcus at boagworld.com. But you can also, you can post them in our new Slack channel that we've started at boagworld.com/slacking.
I really ought to join it.
You ought to. And we ought to encourage bad jokes. I think we need a whole channel dedicated to bad jokes.
Excellent.
But anyway, Seth, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter at Seth Stuff. You can find me on Facebook, and you can go to thecraftofmarketing.com. That's where I have the podcast, or you can look on iTunes for the same thing.
Good.
I'm on the web. I think I'm easily found.
Yeah, you are, actually. This is very true. Also, sethprice.net has got a kind of summary of lots of different things that he gets up to, which is great. So next week is the last in the season, which is really sad. Well, it's not really, but let's pretend it is.
It's off, eh? Yeah. It's really sad.
It's really very sad. We're going to be looking at the organizational impact of user experience, how it actually affects how organizations are structured and that kind of thing. So join us then. But for now, thank you very much, Seth, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.